Welcome to the deep dive. Today, we're jumping straight into something really fundamental. Temperament.
Right. The basic architecture, you could say.
Exactly. Think of it as your innate behavioral style. It's the how you do things, not what you can do that's ability or why you do it that's motivation. This is purely the how.
And, you know, this isn't just some random idea. It really comes from some solid pioneering work. Physicians Alexander Thomas and Stella Chess.
Oh, yeah. The New York Longitudinal Study. That was huge.
It really was. Started way back, 1956. They followed 133 infants, tracked them right into adulthood.
And a big takeaway?
Well, one huge thing was establishing that kids, people, really were active players in our own development. We're not just shaped by our environment.
We shape it back. Okay, so connecting that to temperament, what's the most critical concept they gave us, the one people listening should really grab onto?
That's got to be goodness of fit. Honestly, if you take one thing away, it's this.
Goodness of fit. Why is that so vital, say, for someone managing a team or even just understanding their own relationships?
Because it's basically the key to, well, optimal development, optimal functioning. It's when the environment, its demands, its expectations, the opportunities it offers lines up well with your innate temperament, your style.
And when it doesn't.
That's poorness of fit, and that's where you get the friction, the stress, conflict, burnout even. Think about forcing someone who's naturally cautious and needs time to process into a super fast-paced, high-pressure role where they have to make snap decisions constantly.
Right, that's a recipe for disaster, or at least a lot of unhappiness.
Exactly. So the goal isn't to fundamentally rewire someone. That's often, well, impossible, or at least incredibly difficult. The goal is to adjust the environment or the expectations to the person. Work with the temperament.
Okay, but to do that, we need a way to actually talk about temperament. A vocabulary.
Precisely. And Thomas and Chess gave us one. They identified 9 dimensions. Think of them like sliders, existing on a continuum. We probably don't have time for all 9, but we can hit a few key ones.
Yeah, let's do that. Maybe ones where the contrast really highlights potential friction, like in an office or family.
Okay. Activity level. That's a pretty obvious one. You've got the high activity person. Maybe their engine's always running. They thrive on movement. Might be great on their feet, dynamic tasks.
But stick them behind a desk all day.
And they might seem restless, disruptive. Then you've got the other end, low activity. Calm, maybe more sedentary. Great focus, perhaps. But they risk getting labeled, you know, lazy or unmotivated if movement is seen as the only sign of engagement.
Okay, activity level. What's another contrasting pair?
How about approach versus withdrawal? This is all about your first reaction to something new, a new person, new food, new project, new software.
Okay. So the high approach person.
Jumps right in. Curious, eager, maybe a bit impulsive sometimes. They'll click all the buttons on the new software immediately. The risk is, well, risk-taking without enough info.
And the withdrawal type, often called slow to warm up.
Exactly. They hang back, observe, need more information, maybe ask a lot of questions. They might seem hesitant, but that caution means they think before they leap. Less likely to jump on a risky bandwagon, maybe less susceptible to peer pressure, too. It's a strength often missed.
That really highlights the style difference, doesn't it? The task is the same. Learn the software, but the how is totally different. What about one more? Maybe something like persistence.
Oh, persistence is a big one.
Yeah.
High persistence, sticking with a task despite frustration, seeing things through. It's strongly linked to like achieving goals, academic success.
Sounds great. What's the downside?
Well, highly persistent people can be difficult to redirect. If they're focused on something, getting them to switch gears can be tough. They might get labeled stubborn. Low persistence folks, on the other hand, might switch tasks more easily, but maybe struggle to finish challenging projects.
Okay, so these styles, they stick with us into adulthood, careers, relationships.
Absolutely. They influence so much. Job satisfaction, does your work fit your activity level, your approach style? Relationships, do you understand your partner's need for quiet time or their way of handling change? It's relevant across the board.
Which brings us to the payoff. How do we use this? How do we move from just noticing these things to actually applying it?
Right. The practical steps. We can think of it as the 3 R's. First, R, recognize.
You see it.
Yes. But crucially, without judgment, become an observer. Like a scientist. So instead of thinking, oh, they're being so difficult about this change in plans, you recognize, ah, this might be low adaptability in action. See the pattern, not the bad behavior.
Okay, recognize without judgment. What's next?
Second R, reframe. This is the mental shift. You actively change the label you put on the behavior.
Like changing stubborn too.
persistent or maybe dramatic becomes passionate or highly sensitive. It's not just semantics. It changes how you feel about it and what options you see. It opens doors.
Right. Nice.
Okay.
And the third R.
Respond. Don't react. This is the action part. Based on your recognition and reframing, you consciously choose a response that creates a better fit. You're not just reacting emotionally.
Give me an example.
Okay, that colleague with low adaptability. Mm-hmm. Instead of springing sudden changes, you respond by building in warnings. Hey, major shift coming in 24 hours, then 10 minutes before, then 1 minute. You create predictability.
Or the high activity person.
Maybe suggest walking meetings sometimes. Build in breaks. Don't just demand they sit perfectly still for hours if that's fighting their basic wiring. You're engineering the fit.
Recognize, reframe, respond. It sounds, well, incredibly useful, like a compassionate roadmap for dealing with human differences.
It really is. It helps you understand yourself better, and it gives you practical tools for literally every interaction you have. Less friction, more understanding.
So the final thought then, the big takeaway.
I think the most powerful idea here, the one to really mull over, is just how much energy we waste trying to force ourselves or others to change their fundamental behavioral style. Imagine redirecting all that effort.
Towards what?
Towards creating situations, environments, expectations where each unique temperament, each unique style actually has the best chance to thrive. That's the real power of understanding goodness of fit. Stop fighting the style. Start building the fit.